Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
What is shamanism? What do shamans do? Definition: a religious practice that involves a practitioner who is believed to interact with the spirit world through altered states of consciousness, such as trance. Well, today we're going to have a shaman and a psychic, Gail Hasson, who's a writer, telepath, and yes, a experimental subject. We're going to get into that more today on Truth Be Told. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, the one and only Gail Hasson.
Hello, Gail.
Hello. Thank you for having me on your show.
This is going to be fun. Well, I'm excited because, we had a new show start that's part of the Truth Be Told family. It's called Truth Be Told Transformation. She did a little talk about shamanism at the beginning of the week. And for someone that really doesn't know a lot about shamanism, and I know, spirituality side, but I kind of like to get into a little bit more about what shamanism is, how you got involved, what's the difference between shamanism and witch doctors and all this stuff, because, people out here, the common folk, we don't know all this stuff. So, first of all, you're a psychic medium, is that correct?
So I've been told.
By the spirits or the humans?
The humans.
How did you become a shaman? Let's just get started there before we jump into what shamanism is.
Well, first of all, my life is sort of a collection of synchronicities that happen.
Right.
So I'd kind of like to tell you how I got steered in the shamanic direction.
Yeah, please, because synchronicities.
I didn't make
perfect
choices of these things. They just sort of all
fell into place.
They come. So I had. My first experience with shamanism was I was dealing in my 30s. I had been diagnosed with cervical cancer.
Right.
And I had been raised in a family of vegans, and non-medical or dental visits were, that we didn't do that. So we didn't go to doctors and we didn't go to dentists. And so when I had not taken one of these pap smears, and everyone said, oh, you got to take the pap smear, and I hadn't taken one in 5 years, because I really didn't follow the protocols. And when I went in and had the pap smear, I was told I had cervical cancer and that I needed to have it removed immediately. But I actually didn't believe it, because my upbringing was never to trust doctors or any reports of anything they said.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on a trip by myself. I had gone to the, a group called the Huichol Indians of Mexico, who are a very, very old, I think they date back to the time of the Mayans. They're a very old and sacred group of people. And I was invited to come and participate in a ceremony there, the ceremony of the peyote ceremony, or the dance of the deer. And when I was coming down there, I had this amazing and wonderful experience, and I decided to go back again. When I went back the second time, I said, I think I need a healing from a shaman, because that's the doctors in the Huichol country. It's not a medical doctor. It's a shaman that you go to. And he's the person who, depending what shaman it is, there's shamans that do singing, that they're there. I think it's called cantador. They're there to sing away for spirits or to bring blessings into your homes. So they have different, there's the shamans that work on getting rid of negative things. And there's some shamans that do sort of black magic kind of things that aren't, you know, as a good, reputable, good shaman to go to. So this shaman Nietzsche was picked out for me by the other the other Huichol people I was with. And he went to give this cleansing on me. And I've noticed this in both cultures and things I've seen where shamans seem to do some sort of a like sucking or removal on the body of energies that are more invisible.
Right.
And the shaman was working on me and he was doing all these things with his feathers and he was spitting things in his hands. And as he gets down to my abdomen area and down towards my crotch, he says, and this is interpreted from Huichol into Spanish, into English. So this is how I get the information. I do speak a little Spanish, but, not deep details.
Right.
And so he said that I was very sick there and that I had, his description was, I had a hard lump. Now, this is a man who didn't have any idea that I'd gone to a doctor in the United States and had a diagnosis of cancer that I didn't really believe I had. And that I was told I had 30 days, to get rid of this or it would spread. And instead, I had him do these cleansing. And he said, while I'm here, I have to do 5 cleansings on you at, like every other day or something. He would come and do this blessing with feathers and shamanic things and
right.
Press on my body. And when he spit in his hands, he showed me this like white stuff he had in his hand, and he told me this was part of what was inside me that had to come out, and he told me that I had to have it cut out. So I went up to we're at about 10,000 feet elevation, and it's a place called Las Latas. It's a sacred ceremonial grounds way up in the mountains in the Sierra Madre Occidental Mountains in Mexico, and you can only get there by foot. And I realized then and there that I really have cancer because this shaman has just told me the exact same thing that a medical doctor told me through, examining tissue,
right.
Having biopsies, et cetera. So I became incredibly depressed up there, crying my heart out, thinking, oh my God, I really do have cancer. What am I going to do now? And my friend Miguel, who I was traveling there to visit with, his father, who was one of the oldest of the Huichols, he lived to about 102.
Oh, wow.
Didn't have a gray hair in his head, by the way. And he was just an amazing man. And he heard about whatever the shaman had said and saw me crying and all very depressed. And he made this mixture for me that I didn't know what I was eating, but I just trusted to eat this. I thought it was powdered like beef jerky, not beef, but like a beef jerky, but made from deer.
Right.
And it was some years later that I found out actually what I had eaten was the dried blood of the deer that's caught sacredly. And then they dry it and they pound it up like this. And it becomes this like, powdered herb looking thing. And you eat it in a tortilla. And I ate this. It was very salty. And after I ate it, for 4 days up in the mountain, I felt like I was Superwoman or something. Like it had filled me with some kind of nutritional and energetic charge that wiped away all the negativity and all the sadness and everything I was feeling, realizing, actually, I did have cancer, right? And I then and there decided from him that I would go back home, figure out what I could do to try to heal this cancer and whether I had to have surgery or not, now that I truly believed it was real. So that shaman was considered very respected in the community, and my friends Julio and other Huichol friends of mine would see him for different problems. It's not just necessarily physical problems that people go to a shaman for. It could also be relationship problems, or it could be problems in the invisible where they feel negative energy coming at them and they don't know what it is, and they need a shaman to help cleanse and protect it. So this is some of the jobs of the shaman. I'm not an intellectual that can give you a whole story about the history of shamanism and
right.
And what shamans do. I can only give you my experiential shaman experiences. So after that was in my 30s, I didn't think anything about myself being a shaman. All I had was a tremendous amount of respect for the shaman because of the experience we had together. Well, I went on one trip to New York to visit my family. I live out here in California. And my friend Russell Targ brought me over to meet a dear friend of his, Ingo Swann. And Ingo Swann was considered, I think, one of the best remote viewers in the world. And he was the person who coined the word remote viewing. And we met in his house. And when we were there, he was surrounded by all these amazing paintings. And we had this lovely time together. And when we left, he went to say goodbye to me. And he turned to me and he said, "You know what the problem with you is? You're a shaman and you just don't know you're a shaman and you don't know how to act like a shaman." I thought, okay, you know, and it came out of the clear blue, you know, I thought we talk about remote viewing, right? So that kind of got like, I think that planted a seed. And then I had a, I've written a book and I had given it to Dean Radin to review. And when he wrote something, he said, "In another life or time, this woman would have been a medicine woman or a shaman." So here came like the second drop in, and this was from a scientist, right?
Right.
That, you know, I should be this shaman or whatever. And all through the years, people kept telling me, "Oh, yes, you know, you have healing and la, la, la." But I just figured that's what they say to everybody when you have these readings, you know? So then I end up working, volunteering and working for Dean Radin in the research department at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And we were to have a conference, and this woman calls from Berkeley, and she says how much she would love to come for the conference. Her name was Ruth Inga Hines. And I said, "Well, I'll be happy to give you a ride. If you don't have a ride, I'll come down from Petaluma, pick you up in Berkeley, and bring you up for this conference." Well, when I brought her up, it turned out she was a woman who, for the last, I don't know how many years it was then, maybe it was 25 years or something, she had been conducting a conference on shamanism in San Rafael at the Santa Sabina Center. And she invited shamans from all over the world to speak and share their different, because each shaman has different cultural instruments, you know, different instruments, songs, dance, to come and bring and do their ceremonies and share them with the shaman in the shamanism conference. And first of all, I didn't even know there was such a thing as a shamanism conference when she invited me to this. So I go to the conference, it's 2004. And her and I have this very, it's like I found a mentor, and I have somebody that's encouraging me to talk and give talks in these conferences, which I did a few years later after attending them. And she has these shamans arriving, these Mongolian shamans. And she says to me, and about 100 to 150 people would attend these conferences every year, year after year. And she ran them all herself. She was a German woman, was a brilliant woman, a professor at Berkeley University. And she was like the most knowledgeable woman on Asian shamanism, you know, like that anyone had ever met. And she'd written many, many books. So she tells me, and she had her special way of doing her conferences, and she would yell at everybody all the time. And you could only speak for 20 minutes, except if you were a shaman and doing a ceremony, then you got some more time. So she tells me, "The Mongolian translator hasn't arrived, Gail. So I want you to go upstairs, greet the Mongolians who have arrived, get them settled into their room, let them know what time their presentation is, and make sure they're ready and on time." And I looked at her and I said, "I don't speak Mongolian. How am I going to tell them this?" She says, "Don't worry," with a heavy German accent, "you'll know what to do." Well, I go upstairs. This is Santa Sabina Center is a place where it's used for nuns to go during times of retreat.
Right.
So it's a very it's a very minimalist, simplistic place, but with really lovely, calm energy everywhere there. And beautiful little statues and waterfall thingies. So, not waterfalls, but, you know, fountains. So I go up to the room and there's six of them just standing there, not knowing what to do, of course. And I'm to show them to each room. And I bring up, you know, refreshments and drinks. And I try to communicate with just my hands and sign language. And I'm explaining how we need to take your clothes, open up your suitcase, put the things away. So I go to assist the shaman because nobody understands what I'm saying. And I open up the suitcase. So when I open up the suitcase, I expect, well, the shaman came from Mongolia. You got to have a lot of clothes there, whatever. I open up the suitcase and there is no clothes in there. There's only all sorts of dead animals. And they're parts of his shamanic tools. But this is my, you know, first exposures to this other world of shamans. And he's got a hat that's made out of a complete turtle. He has full birds with all the wings and the, you know, the full bodies that's worn, mm-hmm. you know, on the back. And he's got skulls and bones and, you know, all kinds of unusual items that I cannot imagine how he got through customs with all of this stuff. And I'm thinking that in my mind, and they're looking at the surprised look on my face. And the next thing I know, because we started communicating telepathically, just like Ruth Inger Hines knew I would end up doing. She had enough faith in me to do this. So he looks at me and understands that I'm in awe of, like, where's your clothes, you know? And how did you get this in? And he takes out this beautiful, you know, shaped almost like an envelope size, but a little bigger.
Right.
All silver, beautiful hand-done silver. And he lifts up the little lid, and inside are these sheets of paper that are all written in a gold leaf writing, you know, with gold.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in Mongolian, but they're the papers that officially say you're a shaman. So that this is what he must have shown to customs that allowed him to bring in all these unusual items, including a drum that was made out of two human skulls.
Oh,
you know, these are
wow.
like very ancient.
Right.
Because they're not like these people were killed last year.
Right.
These are things from, you know, generations ago that have either been handed or passed down. But I had no idea until I totally looked, you know, really closely that this drum was composed of two skulls that had been turned this way so that the other side could be the part where you put the drum and use it. So he had, I'd never seen that kind of thing, not human tools made out of human body parts.
Right.
And he also had
that would be
another
a shock.
One that was made out of, and was, he actually gave this to me on this, one of these trips. I've been given gifts by all these different shamans of unusual items. But this was the most unusual one I'd ever been given. And this is before I was ever initiated. And it's an ancient bone that you blow through to rid a person of negativity.
Hmm.
And it gets passed down and each person ends up hanging their scarf, which is called the hatag. It's a Mongolian scarf that's used in all religious, well, not religious, but in all ceremonies and to protect your home. And, you know, it's sort of like a mezuzah, but, you know, but these are scarves. And each one is tied to this. So when the next person gets it, they put their scarf. And when you run through them, you see the original old one had once been white and it's now like blackened from age.
Right.
So it's a very old piece. And these are the kind of tools and things that were in this suitcase. We got down in time. He did the presentation. The translator never arrived. Everyone just experienced what he had to offer energetically with no explanation of words. And the 100 or so people were very moved by his ceremonies.
Right.
And he affected quite a few people there. So that was how I got exposed to shamanism. I never sat there and said, oh, well, you know, I should become a shaman one day.
Right.
But then in 2011, I was invited to attend the 800-year anniversary of the Mongolian Empire. And it was, I just have to read to you off of this. It was the Mongolian Empire founded by Genghis Khan on July 1-5, 2006. The Center of Shaman Eternal Heavenly Sophistication is going to organize an international shamanic symposium, and we want to welcome you to attend our symposium. Shamans will come from USA, China, Russia, and Korea.
Wow.
So I went there and attended that shamanism conference and saw amazing shamanic things that happened, including stopping of the rain, bringing on the rain, you know, amazing things. And I was invited to come back again, and I decided to bring my whole family because I was asked to speak at another conference there. And when I went back to speak with my, when I went back with my family to speak in 2011, we were in a beautiful national park in Mongolia with all these powerful shamans, and we meet Zagda. And Zagda is like this really powerful lady. I was a little scared of her. And she was, we sat in, we call it a yurt, but in Mongolia it's called a ger. And we sat inside this ger way into the wee hours of the morning, drumming, chanting in a circle, people from different countries around the world. It was a small group. And there were about four different shamans. And when she came to do her particular cleansing of us, it involved getting whipped.
Oh.
And shamanism isn't for the, you have to be tough to go through shamanic experiences. It really is. I don't want to think it's like a walk in the park. It is not. And it depended when she, when you sat, each person would have to go in front of her after another shaman had done
right.
a fire blessing on you. And depending on what she was getting rid of that she saw in you, that depended on how hard you got whipped. I fortunately just had a light whipping and I had my clothes on. But I did tell my children in the morning, I can't believe you didn't wake up, stay awake to see your mom get whipped, you know? You would have enjoyed this. So there was another gentleman there who got a more intense whipping, the most intense of anyone there.
And what did you say they break the whipping down by? By what?
By it's what the, it's what she sees like negative in your
oh.
body or in your field.
Right.
I don't know if it's energetic. In this case, it was a physical ailment for this
oh,
man.
Got it.
And he had suffered with very bad back pains for many years. And he lives in Japan, but he was there attending this particular conference. So this gentleman, his Kevin was his name, I'm watching and she's whipping and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know? And another person, it was like just a gentle whip like this. And then she'd say, and then when she was done, she'd say, you're done. She was whipping like harder and harder, you know, but he had a jacket on and, you know, it's not
right.
like he was doing it on the bare skin, but it was an intense whipping. And he was someone I stayed in contact with. And he told me that when she finished his whipping, the next day was the first time he had no back pain in years.
Oh, wow.
And
maybe
we
I need
spoke
to go
with
see
each other because
we'd
seen each other at other conferences later. And he said to me, I still have no back pain. So
wow.
I'm just sharing an experience of someone's experience with a shaman other than myself with cancer. He's with a back pain.
Right, right, right.
Smaller issue, but still the shaman is giving him relief. And there's, you know, he didn't say to her, I have a bad back. She's just saying this bad back needs to be taken care of because the shaman sees and knows where to go. So we leave Mongolia, we say goodbye to her. And the next thing I know, a few months later, they're all, she's coming to the United States. And I'm not sure if it was her first trip or not, but I know it was her first trip to California. She's a very, very big shaman in Mongolia right now. And she travels the world and speaks in symposiums and, you know, different things in different in Korea. She's a lot, she does a lot of work around the world. And so since that time from 2011 till now, she's become an incredibly busy woman. So she came here, she stayed with us. We had a lovely time. We showed them around, we did things together, we whatever. And then we put her in a car that she was leaving with some friends going up to Chicago where there's a large Mongolian group of people. And when a shaman comes from Mongolia, if there are any Mongolians near, in fact, one of the shamans, I had a different one, Dr. Lagva was here. And shamans, they brought kids from Chicago here so that they would get a blessing and cleansing
wow.
from a shaman. Like the people that brought their Mongolian family
right.
here to have a cleansing were for serious things, where one was an alcoholic, another, this kid was on the wrong path. And the thing I want to say to you is that when I checked up on what happened later on, there was a change. The person stopped alcoholism. He did change his life. He had a severe whipping here, I have to say. And this young boy went home and became like a student and got his life together. So, you know, the Mongolian people are grateful when someone from Mongolia comes here. So I try to provide a space where they can do this if they do want to, you know, come here.
Right.
So she comes and she's about to leave and she goes away and she comes back 2 days later and says, I can't go to Chicago now. She doesn't say this to me in English, but I have to stay here. You have to become a shaman. I said, what? I didn't say, Zogta, could you turn me into a shaman? You know what I mean?
Right.
But I had all of the items that had been given to me over the years, including a handmade Mongolian del, I think is what it's called. It's the beautiful brocaded clothing.
Right.
You've seen in the pictures I was wearing. That was hand-stitched and handmade for me by one of the most famous artists in Mongolia and her mother. And she said, it's not that photo.
No.
And she said that it's the end. Yeah, there we are. You see, it's gold and blue.
It's beautiful.
That's all hand-stitched by two women who I hardly knew that sent it to my hotel the night before I left Mongolia on that first trip.
Wow.
But I didn't know that was going to end up being turned into my shamanic clothing 6 years later. So she said to me, I saw spirits all around you. And all those spirits need to, you know, work with you. You need to become a shaman, and I'm going to initiate you as a white Buryat shaman. In Mongolia, there are different groups of shamans, and they have certain things that they follow. If they're a Buryat shaman, or if they're, I can't remember the names now, of the other different types of shamans,
mm-hmm.
but Buryat is one of the oldest of the shamans. And they require, I think it was 28 of these, they're actually considered snakes. Ooh. And you'll see them dangling in the photos off of my clothing. Well, when she said we had to prepare for the next 7 days, I hardly had sleep. And we had to get all of these items she would be asking for, but she'd have to kind of describe and point to things. So we figured out she needed clean sheep's wool. She wanted sheep's wool. And oddly enough, I went to some craft store and someone had just left a box of wool there recently in front of the door. So they gave me this whole box of wool. And then it turned out another friend of mine, Kim, she happened to have really clean, beautiful sheep's wool she'd saved, she didn't know why, in a bag for years. So the items I needed were odd items and they were just coming at me at the time that she'd be asking.
Wow.
So Universe we had spoke. To sit there at night, and I'm not like, I do arts and crafts things, but I'm not like a seamstress. I can't sew very well. We had to sew these snakes. I don't know if you can see them, but they're little tiny tubes and they're about, you know, they're about the width of a carrot or something, you know, a thin carrot. You see them dangling down there. It's blue, yellow, red. Well, the colors of what they had to be are very important. At the bottom, you'll see those are the tails, the mm-hmm. ends of the
I
snake.
See them, yeah.
And at the top, attached on the top of the clothing, is their head. And they each have two eyes. They each have a mouth. And they're all made out of leather on the top and the bottom. They're filled with sheepskin. Huh. We made all the tubes for her, but she had to twist the sheepskin to be able to get it through those tiny little openings.
God. Wow.
And let me tell you, it was very painstaking. And when we finished them, hours in the night, and I'm not a night person, I'm a day person, and I had to stay up till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning every day for 5 days making these. And she said to me, be very happy. In Buryat, we only need 28. She said, if you were initiated as this other type of shaman in Mongolia, you would have had to make 108 of these.
Oh my
Which
God.
I would be still doing them probably.
Right.
So she comes in the next day and she takes out this measuring tape And she measures each one and says, oh, you didn't do these correctly. This is not right. And when she's not happy, you know, you don't need any language for that. She says, you have to redo all of them. Because even though for me it's experiential, she's actually following a written form of how this is supposed to be made.
Right.
And every snake is a certain amount of centimeters. And if it's 2 centimeters off, it's not, it has to be redone.
Oh my God.
So we redid them all. And we had to, I had to like lay out all kinds of my things that I've used before in ceremonies. And she would pick what things would be part of my shamanic initiation. So my Wechol things, I was given a pendulum, one of those fortune-telling little balls that you hang and it All tells right. you yes mm-hmm. or no. It was given to me by an Ecuadorian shaman. So she would pick out things, and all of these things had to be laid out on the table, including all of my clothing that would be dressed. I would be dressed in later. She then said I needed 10 people to work that day to do all the things to prepare for the ceremony. And she told me, excuse me, I had to invite my family, my mother, my, you know, anyone who could come.
Right.
But it was a weekday where most people are working. And it was a day where I only gave people like 3 days notice, you know, oh, I'm having a ceremony. I didn't know people were supposed to be invited, you know. So she chooses. I live on 15 acres in an orchard, so I'm surrounded by lots of trees.
Nice.
But I have only one tree on my property that's a huge redwood tree. And it's the thing you can see the furthest on the road when you're coming up our road, Green Valley. That tip of that tree shows above any other tree here. That's how tall it is. And she said, that's where we're going to have the ceremony.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So she told us different things we had to do to gather. We had to make all these things for the clothing. And then we had to gather different items. So there needed to be 9 rocks, like beautiful round rocks, which all came out of my landscaping. She had to have, I happened to have abalone shells because I had friends who were abalone divers. So when she saw the abalone shells, that was the perfect thing. And we needed not 5 pounds of salt, but like 50 pounds of salt.
Oh my God. That's a lot of salt.
And we needed gallons and gallons of vodka, milk.
Of course
and
you
water.
Do.
And what she did was, the salt was used to be spread in a huge circle around the edges of the tree, but a huge circle that
like
this
margarita.
Became an invisible gair or yurt. And the white salt is where you're protecting everything that goes on inside that circle is protected by this salt. I don't have deep explanations because remember, this is all done without a translator.
Right, right.
The next thing she wanted was that there would be a little doorway, so that means that's where anyone enters into this new sacred space. Then she set an altar up by underneath the base of the tree. And then for whatever reason, only women, these are where the 10 people were doing all this work. I didn't know about everything that was going on because she was preparing me in the house with other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And out here, she was instructing people by yelling at them. Go and do the, you know, and giving like a sample, like so. So there was there was 4 colors of ribbon, I think, 3 or 4 colors, red, not red, yellow, and green, which represented nature and plants and trees, and white and blue, which represented sky. And they had to go around my redwood tree, which is a really, you know, it's like they needed ladders, you know, and tie these ribbons all around the tree. And then they had to hang, we had to like melt tremendous amounts of fat and butter into little tiny cups. And this is definitely all part of the Mongolian shamanic tradition. And these cups had to be hung all around the tree also.
What was that purpose?
Not sure what the, I think that had to do with feeding the spirits.
Oh, okay.
That the butter in there was feeding the spirits. And then, this is the funny one, so I hope you're ready for a funny one.
I need it. Come on, let's do it.
She tells my husband, who's the sweetest man around, and by the way, he's an MIT and Yale, you know, AI person.
Right.
So he's everything opposite the shamanism things.
Right, right.
And he had to be one of the 10 working very hard on this preparation. And so she tells him, I need horse shit. I need horse shit. Go get me some horse shit. So my husband, we take like a 3-mile walk and we live in an area where there's, you know, fields of trees and, you know, vineyards and orchards, and people have horses here. And he remembered one of the neighbors that we walked by, that they had a horse. So he knew if he went to their field, he'd find a little horse shit.
Did she need dry or wet?
Dry. Had to be dry. So he goes over and he takes like a little tiny shovel and he fills a small bag like this. And he comes back home and he's so proud. But while he's there, he's thinking, you know, here I am trespassing on someone's property. I'm a black man. And I'm shoveling their manure. So he held his phone up saying, you know, I'm just doing this for my wife. You know, I'm not here to hurt anyone, you know. And he comes back and he goes in front of Zagda. And I was here because I was in the kitchen. And he opens the door and he's so proud of bringing what she asks to him. And she looks at him and her face falls like this. And she looks like this. This is the shit you brought me? This isn't what I want. She says, I know where what I want and where it is.
Oh my God, that's funny.
So she jumps in the car with him. And she just goes like this, you know, come on. I love this woman. And she takes those, you know, the white plastic garbage bags you use in your house. She takes that size.
Oh my God, that's a lot of horse shit.
And she's taking out, she had noticed that the exact dry ones she wanted were, of course, under people's rose bushes around that had the horses.
Oh, my God.
So she takes David back there, and the two of them are stealing the people's, you know, comp.
Oh, my God.
Off of the roses.
That would be, that would have got, up, should have got that on camera.
Right? And fills up the bags. She brings them back here. And all of it is put inside these abalone shells around this gear that we've made, and they are all set on fire. So this is in Mongolia, that's how they use, you know, instead of wood, they're using these dung patties from yaks, and, you know, and it's put in there and it burns beautiful fires. So she knew what she wanted and she knew where to get it. We just weren't, you know. So she creates this gear. She puts up, there's chairs for everyone to sit and watch the ceremony. And on her table, which you have in the photos, she puts and hangs all of her Mongolian shamanic things, and it's all hanging up on ropes. And she has mine all hanging up on ropes. And the ceremony begins, and part of the preparation was those 9 rocks that came out of my landscaping had been put in a fire for many hours. And the ceremony went on for 5 hours after this 6 days or whatever of preparation. And we get together and it begins, you know, part of the thing about the initiation is that you're being transformed. You're being transformed and you're shedding all the negativities that you yourself are holding inside your body and inside, or, you know, in your aura or spheres or whatever you want to call the areas around yourself. And I had specifically said, I didn't know that. I knew there would be something, but I said, could we skip the whipping?
I've already been whipped.
I said, I was whipped in Mongolia, and I just didn't want to get whipped. But I didn't realize whipping was going to be transferred into something else.
I hate to even ask.
So before I get to that, they did a lot of drumming, chanting, jaw harp playing. Oh, and I did bring my jaw harp if you want me to play for a few seconds.
I would love
later.
To hear it.
And she said, now, you know, there was a lot of sounds and things and whatever. And I was dressed in a white African robe that my husband had gotten when he was 16 years old in Africa. So I wore that as my clothing to be, you know, as the Gael. And then they said, now it's time for us to transform you. And I didn't know what that meant. But what it meant was, all of a sudden, all my clothes were taken off of me. And I was naked in front of all these people, including my, you know, 75-year or 80-year-old mother and my niece and my neighbors and all these different men. And, you know, in my 20s, I would have gloriously stood there naked and said,
right,
yes,
right.
Here, I look gorgeous then. But at this age, it's not a pretty sight. Who wants to see this, you know? And I don't know that this is going to happen, right? So I'm standing there naked, completely naked. And the pot of all those 9 rocks that had been in fire for all those hours had to be brought over by the man who tended the fire.
Right.
Who had been my therapist many years before. So this was an unusual role he was chosen to, you know, she picked who did what. And she has me squat over the pot. I knew I had something that you put ashes in from your wood stove, so I knew it would be able to take that kind of a heat and not melt or damage anything. And so she had them in there, and she made me stand over the rock, squatting over it, and then from the top of my head all the way down, they poured milk and vodka and water, and it cleansed all over my body, cleansing the negative energy. But when that water hit the rocks and that vodka hit the rocks and that milk hit the rocks, the steam that it created, I screamed so loud, my mother came rushing over, what are you doing, Tyre? And they said, they like pushed my mother away, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they said I had to do it again and again. So it wasn't like just one time. I had to sit there, burning thing. And the inside of my thighs were bright. When I say red, it was red for hours. Later on, after the ceremony was over, the Zagda would come and she would just sort of lift up my thing and look again just to check the thighs, you know?
Make sure there's no blisters or anything.
Nothing. Everything was exactly perfect. You know, it was shocking to me and it burned at first, but I went through I know what the point of it is. You can't get negative energy, you know, saying, oh, now you're so lovely. You get, there's some payments here, you know,
right,
and the payment was the burning sensation. After that, she had each person that was in the audience, or not audience, but the people that were watching, she had each one, but they were fully clothed, stand over the pot and also be cleansed. So she cleansed each person afterwards.
Oof.
Then she tells my husband, you have to take all these rocks now. Again, remind you, we have no English here. She says, and you have to take them away from your property and throw them out in the road somewhere. And these were all landscaped rocks, so they're the really nice, beautiful rocks.
Right.
But all of my negative energy and all those people
collected
that were there,
the
all that was put into that pot, into those rocks. And she said he had to walk backwards while he was, you know, getting rid of these, and he had to wear the hat backwards. I think
cluck like a chicken. I was kidding.
So he just did it. You know, what a wonderful husband he is. He went and, you know, got rid of the rocks. I think somebody came driving down the road on Green Valley one, you know, within a few hours and saw these beautiful landscape rocks and picked them up because they were gone when we went out there later. And I'm thinking, I hope they didn't take my negative energy to that
right.
house.
You know? You probably warned them about, should have left a note or something.
Right. And then we went back, and then I was dressed in all the Mongolian clothing after the, I call it the scalding, but that's not really what it was. It was the cleansing.
Right.
And they dressed me with, it was her and her assistant was my dear friend's wife, Ayuna, two of my Mongolian, she's like our Mongolian family that we stay with in Mongolia. And Ayuna and her dressed me and put on all these, the necklaces and all the different clothing with such care and such love. It was hard to express, but it was the tender, very tender moment in a lot of yelling and all kind of other things that went on before.
Right.
And she started to tell me the things I had to do. So I had to do four different things. And these things, which I sent you the final picture of, put me into a completely altered state. And I know I was in such an altered state. My son said to me, "Ma, it was about 98 degrees that day. You can't handle heat, and you were dressed in that clothing, covered in furs, dancing, singing, drumming." He said, "I couldn't believe that you were doing this." He said, "I know you were in an altered state because you could never do that in a regular state." So I had to sing, I had to say, "Om Mani Padme Hum," over and over again. That was the Tibetan chant. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with those words?
Mm-mm. I mean, I may have heard it before, but my memory is like
Tina Turner spoke about them.
Oh, yeah. I do remember. In Buddhism, right?
It's what saved her in Buddhism.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to read here for you that excuse me for a sec. I was just going to give you the translation of that, if I can find it here. Here we go. It invokes the powerful, benevolent attention and blessings of, I can't pronounce the name, but Chenrezig, the embodiment of compassion.
Hmm.
So that's the meaning of the words Om Mani Padme Hum. And her and Ayuna were saying it, and then that's what I had to say over and over and over again. I can't tell you how long anything happened for, because in that state of out-of-body experience, there is no time there. But there was some amount of time I had to do that. And then I had to take my Mongolian drum and I had to keep drumming and drumming and drumming, and I had to dance. And so and also your eyes are closed, or she had me covered with a scarf here. And because you're ridding of this body and you're connecting with a spiritual body.
Right.
So I'm doing that. And then she has me do this, the jaw harp. And for some reason, I have a knack for this jaw harp that the Mongolians are like amazed at. Like I've been playing it for years. And I don't know why I have this connection with this little instrument, but I do.
Well, can we hear something?
Sure. I'll just play a second here for you.
I would love to hear a little bit.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Usually when you do the jaw harp and you're using to do it for ceremony or in person, I would have my head covered. But right now I'm just showing it to you as a sample of what it sounds like.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah.
So I haven't been ever given a lesson in jaw harp playing, but for some reason I have this feeling.
That's
for
great. Well, I mean, the jaw harp, what is it, the vibrations? Does it invite in spirits? Does it?
I think it's the sound.
The sound, yeah.
Sound invites in spirit, I think. And it's one of the oldest instruments. Chinggis Khan had a jaw harp. When I went to the museums and saw the jaw harp there, I was in awe that this is an instrument that's been played there since the times of Chinggis Khan. And
wow,
he was also considered a shaman. And shamanism was the religion of Mongolia until the different countries that took it over and didn't let them be free.
Brought their own.
All that history. Anyhow, so then we did the jaw harping, and I went in a completely altered state. And I got to a point where I'd been doing it so long that I just started to collapse. So they caught me and they put me on the tree. And I was there holding this tree, and I started speaking, I think, in what they call tongue or something, where just different languages and sounds just kept coming out of me. I can't tell you what it is or where it comes from or anything, except that in that altered state, that was one of the other side effects of this.
Right.
And then we, let's see. And then we sat, then everything started to wind down after that.
Mm-hmm.
And there were certain things, for some reason, each child in my family had to give me a gift of money. I don't know what the significance
is. You're like, that's the first time my kids gave me money.
In fact, I have it. I have a special book that I made of, you know, my shamanic initiation, and I taped the money in it. So I still have all the money, you know.
All right, who was the cheap one that gave a $10 bill and the rest gave 20s?
I don't know. I was in an altered state at the time.
Right, okay.
I do have three children though. and the other part was, like, she told the people that they should bring a gift, like it's like an honoring celebration. It was sort of, it was like the best birthday like ever. And people brought such beautiful, touching, you know, like shamanic items, like a special bag or a special little bell or a feather. And so I was very honored to have all these lovely items and gifts. And it's now 2021 and we're still in contact, even though we've never been able to be physically together since then. While she was here, a very unusual thing happened, which was there were some Mongolian students at UCSF in San Francisco, and they contacted her and said they wanted to come up and film why she did an initiation, because I was her first American initiation into shamanism she'd ever done. I was her 63rd. So in Mongolia, she had already initiated 62 Mongolians. And, oh, a very important piece I forgot, and I sent you a photo of it. I'd like to explain it if you can see it in the photos. There's a photo of cloth, and you see drawings on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, right. I don't know if you can show that. Okay, see those drawings? Well, she told my husband another job that he had to do, and this was like the night or two before the actual ceremony, is he had to draw all these different children of different cultures and races and put them on this specific scarf, on this specific fabric. She comes back in and she looks at the children and she says, wait a minute, they don't have shoes, they don't have hats. These children have to have everything, keep drawing. I happen to be fortunate that not only is my husband so wonderful with this shamanic stuff, but he also happens to be very musical and artistic. So he drew beautiful children.
Well, he did a great job. He did a pretty good
job. Yeah, he did a great job. And that hung on the redwood tree during the ceremony. Well, apparently that goes back with her. She took that home. That was the only thing that went home with her. And when she sent me a photo once from her house, those are all the people she's initiated. Everyone with has a drawing like that that she has hanging
That's
in
amazing.
Her home. So the drawing my husband did that hung here on our redwood tree in Sebastopol now hangs in Mongolia at her house.
Well, we have just a few minutes left. I can't believe this hour has gone by
fast. Oh, I have so many more stories.
You're going to have to. We'll have to do a part two now because there's still. I want to ask you about your being an experiment or part of the experiment. But let me ask you this. The final question here. Once that you got initiated as a shaman and went through the ritual, what have you done with it yourself? Now you're because listen, I live in L.A. and every street corner has a shaman, and so first of all, how do we know who to go to? Because you know, there's many of us wouldn't mind being part or going to a shaman and help cleanse and feel better and you know get our lives back in order, but. So how do we do that? How do we determine who to go to? And then also, what have you done with your now gift of being a shaman?
Well, what I've done is, well, first off, I understand exactly what you're saying about there being one on every corner.
Right.
And, you know, my first rule of thumb is if the person wants money, and there's money to do with it,
right.
Then that, you know, the shamans that I've gone and done healing with, or like Zagda, the work that we did, mm-hmm. there was no money involved. She didn't say to me, okay, now that I've done this, I need $200 to cover my expenses.
Right,
<you know?
laughs> right, right.
She did all this because she was told by her spirits that this is what she's supposed to do. Spirits don't charge money. Hmm. You know, the information that comes from the universe, this is something that I have a problem with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that those things are supposed to be I mean, I know people have to make a living and everything, but when it comes to the spiritual world and the shamanic world, to me, money isn't part of it. If someone wants to give you something because they are so thrilled with the experience they had with you, then you welcome that as a gift.
Right.
But you should. I expect nothing whenever I have any kind of experiences with people. Just the same, she never asked me for anything. She only gave of herself and stayed here for days doing all this work. She didn't say, okay, here's my fee. You know?
Right.
And also, you know, so there's my one thing about the Hollywood or the LA corner people. That's about the most advice I'll give you. There's a whole bunch of money involved and follow me with this. I don't go for that. I find everyone has a different experience. And some of the shamans I've met some of them are so wild and crazy. It's not right for everybody, but there's some people that person rings through and gets what they need. Mm-hmm. So you can't determine who that right person is. The person themselves has to know it from inside
right.
their gut.
That's what I always say, go with the gut.
Go with the gut. And I used to have a lot of shamanic ceremonies here, and I've had shamans from all over the world come to our house, and I would invite all these people. And then after a while, I started to say, you know, I don't want to be responsible for recommending these people because I'm not sure how good they are either yet.
Right.
You know, I'm
right.
just getting to know them myself. So I like to have some discernment and not just jump into anything that you hear about. For my own self, what's happened with the shamanism thing is that when I put that clothing on, I feel protected to do if I'm doing some kind of work. But I never like to say I'm a psychic or I'm a medium or I'm a shaman. I don't know. I have a problem saying those things. But I did 3 shamanic cleansing or blessings or whatever you want to call them this last month that was so powerful that when I finished, I said, I guess I really am a medium, you know? Because I expect nothing when someone, and I did 2 of them in person where the persons came to my home
mm-hmm.
and I used to do these in my bedroom. And then I realized
wow.
I was getting all their stuff into my bedroom.
Right.
Now I have a balcony off my bedroom and I set everything up on the balcony and do it all outside. And I received a Siberian drum that came all the way from Siberia that I need to get it tightened again. But that's the drum that I've used most of the time. And things just happen when I do this, but I don't have any schedule or plan. and I don't follow any particular procedure.
Right.
I just use the tools they've given me, my jaw harp, my drum. I make sounds. And then if I sort of let my mind get out of the way and not judge or state or think or make a should or a shouldn't, information just comes up to me. And sometimes I actually feel the person who's passed away, like I'm moving in the way they move. Or I start saying to my friend, I don't know why I'm saying this, but I feel that I want, you know, coffee or whatever, you know, whatever the thing is. And that's when I get the validations from the people saying, oh, my God, that I never told that to anyone. How did you see that? You know, so I don't have like a, I always say to them, I don't know what will happen. Maybe nothing, maybe something, but we'll just let whatever be occur. And it's brought some wonderful relief to family and friends that I love very dearly. And if I can give some kind of relief like that by making these sounds and doing these things, that's what I feel like we're here for, is to be of service to each other.
Right, exactly.
So I want to be able to help in any way. So now this shamanic thing has sort of given me a, you know, a uniform or a, you know, a way to present myself to my friends and to be able to share this energetic thing that can happen when we come together as two people that we step out of the way in the, you know, mind's world and we connect in the heart.
Well, unfortunately, we have to go, but for the people out there that, you know, maybe want to know more about you, your, you know, do you offer services or, you know, I know you have a book. I think I have it here, A Small Medium at Large.
Yes, I haven't published it yet, hoping to get that published at some point. I have a website. Actually, I have to read them to you because they're all just new and upcoming here. But if they want to email, they can email me at asmallmediumatlargepodcast@gmail.com. And if anybody has any kind of, if you can put that up on your site,
yep, we
I'm
will.
I'm always happy to answer any questions if I can help anyone out. I don't do things like readings. I do them only when they come spontaneously. If I'm talking to someone or I hear a message,
right,
or I tell them. But I don't have a shingle that says, come to me and I'll charge you $50 and I'll give you a reading. I don't do those kinds of things. And actually,
that's
I've been like
refreshing
this since I'm a little girl. My dreams and, you know, experiences and things that I hear or know have been happening, you know, way before I got initiated as a shaman.
Right.
So I've kind of been known that way amongst my family and friends.
Well, thank you so much. And we're going to have to do a part two because we didn't get to a lot of things that that I definitely want to ask you. So hopefully you'll agree to that.
Well, I would love a part two. And in the part two, I'd love to share photos of the different shamans that I've had or seen or dealt with.
We'd love that.
Conferences, so you can see what someone from Laos dresses like, and someone from Ecuador, and
I would love to see the difference because I know everyone has its own, I mean, personality. So.
Oh, and let me leave this one thing for anyone who is interested in shamanism: the book that was written back in the 70s, I think, I'm not sure, is "The Way of the Shaman" by Michael Harner. He was the man who brought shamanism to America and explained it in a form and taught it. And his organization still teaches shamanism. Those are places that are reputable that you can go to.
I'll have to check it out because I don't know that book myself. So
The Way of the Shaman. It was, you know, it was in pocketbook size back in the old days.
Right. Well, Gail, thank you so much. And people said they love your humor and you're a sweet lady and you're a natural at this, so we appreciate you being on the show, and definitely we'll have you back for a part two. And everybody, please, in the chat room, people that are listening to us on our podcast and later on for our YouTube channel, thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate it. Always go to truthbetoldworldwide.com, and please subscribe to our YouTube channel, share the shows, and also our podcast on Apple and all the other sites. So we really appreciate you. Until next time, I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told.
This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.